welcome to Jilly Bowl, the podcast about that song you know but know nothing about. I'm Jamie.
I'm Emily.
Each week, we'll break down a topic from Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. We'll take turns being the expert each week as we dive into these people, events, etc. Disclaimer, if you are already a history buff, this podcast is not for you. If you're just a sweet dum-dum like us and want to know a little more, you're in the right place. Today's topic is Santayana Goodbye.
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 Okay.
So, George Santayana was a philosopher and author, and the goodbye part refers to his death. So yep. That's why. It's not like he, like, had this goodbye speech or, like, it was just he died, so, like, goodbye.
Goodbye, Santayana?
Santayana.
Santayana. Uh-huh. Did Billy Joel come up with the phrase Santayana goodbye, or was it used in, like, media or something?
To the best of my knowledge, but that was all...
That was all Billy.
All Billy.
Great.
Uh-huh. But, yeah, he died in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
So George was born in Madrid, Spain on December 16th, 1863, and he lived there until 1872 and then moved to Boston, Massachusetts with his mother, which is kind of funny because he just moved with his mother. She was married to his father,
mm-hmm.
but she moved. I just don't think that they got along really well, and the dad came to live with them in Boston and then was like, I don't want to live with you, and then moved back.
What a crazy, like, I'm going to move from Spain to Boston.
To Boston.
In the 50s. Or not, no, yeah. 50s? No, the 1800s. Mm-hmm. What year is it? I'm so lost.
1872.
1870. Okay, so I have no idea what Boston's like in the 1870s.
Yeah,
sorry.
Not a clue. But
sure.
That's what he did, and he lived in the U.S. during a lot of his working life.
Okay.
He attended Harvard.
Same.
And, yeah. He was just really smart. He graduated summa cum laude in 1886, so at that point he was 23. He went then to the University of Berlin for a couple of years and studied philosophy, and then he returned back to Harvard to complete his doctorate. He became a faculty member on the philosophy team there and worked with a couple other famous people that I did not know of, and I tried to research them a little bit, and philosophy makes my brain hurt, is basically.
Okay, did you take a philosophy class in high school or college?
No. Avoided it. Like the plague.
I took a class in high school called The Bible as Literature and Philosophy. It was a class. Okay, if you went to the same high school I did, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because it was a class that a lot of people took as a senior, and we talked about the Bible. I did not go into a religious school. I went to a public school, but we talked about the Bible and stories within the Bible. But we also talked about philosophy.
Oh,
do I remember anything from this class? No, I do remember though the teacher once had students rip out pages from the phone book, and then he handed students a Bible and said to rip out a page from the Bible, and it was like this, he was like, it's just a book, and we were like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
can't do it. Then we read the book Sophie's World, also barely remember what it's about, but it's about philosophy. And then in college I had to fill a credit,
yeah,
you know, and I went to class, and the professor was like, all right, this class is going to be like this. If you can't handle this, then you should drop this class. And you know what I did? I dropped that damn class. I was like, yep, you know what? I'm not ready for this.
This is not for me.
This is not for me, friend. And I took a different history class, and I loved it. I took a geography class.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So there's everyone now. You know my personal history of philosophy.
And the Bible.
The Bible.
I took a comparative religions class in high school, but that was because it was cool, and I mostly took it because you got to go on a field trip to go visit different places of worship, which was really cool.
Oh, but that's really cool.
It was cool. Yeah. But that was the main reason why.
The more you know.
The more you know. So, yes, psychology and philosophy are things I don't understand.
I think, honestly, we could, you're smart. We could understand it. It's just maybe not the top of our things we're ready to learn.
I tried.
We're so young. We have so much time to learn.
Gosh.
Okay, keep going.
But yeah, he was a faculty member at Harvard with William James. No idea.
Huge fan.
He's known as the father of American psychology.
Okay.
Because that. And Josiah Royce. And he created the idea of American idealism, like that definition, which I tried to investigate about and I couldn't. So,
Bunch of dudes, got
bunch
it.
Bunch of dudes. So dude heavy, this
very
episode.
Dude, yeah, very dude heavy.
But all this time, even at Harvard, he preferred to be in Europe. So he spent his summers in Spain, spent his sabbatical leave at the University of Cambridge, and also spent a lot of time in Italy.
How does he fund this?
Right?
Like, I'm going to go to Harvard, and then I'm going to spend time in Spain, and then I'm going to be at Cambridge and hop all over England and whatever.
Yeah, I'm assuming you get paid decent when you're working at Harvard, but
fine,
I still
whatever.
Don't. Maybe his family had money. I don't know.
I guess I should have gone into philosophy.
Oh, God.
Okay.
So he wrote a lot of things. There's a couple. One is called The Sense of Beauty, and he wrote a lot about aesthetics.
Yeah.
And morals, and basically, like, if you are going to judge something that is beautiful, you're virtually establishing an idea. God, I don't know.
No, it's okay. I'm following you.
Okay. So that was a lot of his information that he liked to write about. Another bigger work that he did was called Interpretations of Poetry and Religion, and discussed more aesthetics and morals, and then also kind of took that information about a poet named Robert Browning. He was a poet and a playwright, so he kind of took his work and discussed aesthetic and morals in his work.
Okay.
In 1907, he was 44 and officially became a Harvard professor. So, like, before he was just working on the team, the philosophy team, but he was actually a professor now. Although he quit, I'm not sure, but he was overseas, not in the U.S., and he quit. He sent his letter of resignation from Europe and then was like, I'm not coming back. And he never did. He never went back to the U.S. for the rest of his life.
Okay.
But his mom passed away, and so that's why when he quit.
Okay.
And they tried to bribe him, but he refused. And everybody was really surprised because he was gaining all of this popularity and fame. And he was really kind of, it seemed like at the peak of his career. He was 44 and just everything seemed to be going for him the way that it should and what he wanted. But he didn't really like the rigidness of academia. And he just wanted to focus on himself and writing and those things. So that brings us to World War One, and believe it or not, the war made him feel really sad.
Okay.
Yeah. So he holed up in Oxford, and he lived a very secluded life. During that time, he just didn't see people, and he just didn't want to be a part of anything.
Okay.
He, during this time, wrote a book called Egotism in German Philosophy, which was basically like a big diss.
A criticism against Germany?
Germany, yeah.
Sounds like it.
And it made it really clear that he was pro-Allied forces.
Yeah.
So he just continued to write. He moved to Rome in 1924, and that's where he lived until he died, and wrote lots of books. He also wrote a 3-volume autobiography about himself.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just kind of a lot. He, interestingly enough, too, never was married. And there's not a lot known about his romantic life. and it, nobody really understood. I guess he had a lot of friendships with people who were openly homosexual and bisexual, which led people to make assumptions.
I wonder if he was just asexual.
Yeah. And, like, there was nothing I tried to look into it. But there wasn't even, I mean, it seemed like he had some close friends that he worked with, but he kind of just seemed more of a loner and enjoyed people because people really liked him, especially like later in his life when he was very popular. People would come visit him in Rome. He lived in a nursing home.
Okay.
And people would just come, and namely Americans. Americans loved him and would come and visit him. And he wrote up until his death, even though he was nearly deaf and half blind.
Wow.
Yeah. Santayana, he wrote a ton of books. And kind of the overarching themes were about human cognition, cultural practices, social institutions, and their relation to their environment. So okay. How the environment can impact those things and vice versa. But he was mostly known for aphorisms.
Okay.
Do you know what those are? I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will just read a couple
to you. Because he has some good gems.
Just, oh God, you could maybe think so. I don't know. I just am.
I'm excited. They're either going to be great or terrible. Or I'm going to be too confused. I think
all of them are terrible. Okay. I think the whole idea of the aphorism is so infuriating.
Okay.
Infuriating because it's like you're just saying something that is just a truth. Like,
sure.
Okay. one that is really well known is those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
Oh, that's him?
That's him.
Cool.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. No. It's just a truth.
True.
Only the dead have seen the end of war.
Mm.
Which, it was, I don't remember where it was, and I didn't watch the movie again to confirm it, but I guess that quote is said in the movie Black Hawk Down.
I haven't seen Black Hawk Down.
Oh, really?
I think it's, I don't know if I can handle it.
It's a good movie.
Okay.
It's a good movie. But I guess it was misquoted of being said that was originally said by Plato, but it wasn't.
Just off by a couple hundred years.
Yeah. So.
Woof. They're all philosophers.
And he also had he defined beauty as pleasure objectified.
Whoa.
So there's that.
Also true.
Yeah. I get it.
My brain did a little flip-flop.
I have a couple more that I felt were a little bit sillier.
Mm-hmm.
And not sillier, but, again, just the truth. A child educated only at school is an uneducated child.
Wow. Just put that as a poster of my classroom.
Yeah.
And talk about it.
There's no cure for birth and death save to enjoy the interval.
Okay.
Sanity is a madness put to good use.
Seems self-indulgent. Whatever.
The wisest mind has something yet to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've had that in a fortune cookie.
I was thinking that sounds like a fortune cookie. Oh, boy.
Oh, buddy. So, kind of cool, though. A lot of his students at Harvard continued on to be great writers themselves. Which I was kind of impressed by this list. T.S. Eliot, Robert Frost, Gertrude Stein, Horace Kallen, Walker Lippmann, and W.E.B. Du Bois.
Oh, yeah.
So they all
studied under him at Harvard?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Kind of cool. But, yeah, all of this research was very male-heavy. But one beautiful lady gem was, I had just mentioned, someone who'd studied under him, Gertrude Stein.
Yes.
Do you know about her?
I do, but I don't know very much about her.
Oh, I feel like I had recognized the name, but I didn't know too much about her. So I just want to talk about her life a little
bit. Tell me.
Mm-hmm. She grew up in California, but lost her parents when she was a young teenager. Mm-hmm. Both of her parents within like a year or two between. And she moved to Paris when she was 19.
Wow.
She lived there for the rest of her life. And she hosted a Paris salon.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Picasso, Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and Henri Matisse would meet.
Ooh, at her salon to discuss ideas and such.
Yeah.
Swanky.
So she, I mean, you're 19 years old and you're in Paris and you just have all of these people who, you know, who know, I don't know too much about all of those people, but like, maybe they weren't as famous then, but
right.
How...
Still.
So cool. She was a writer,
mm-hmm.
and she wrote the autobiography of Alice B. Toklas? Toklas? Do you know the book?
I actually don't know how to say it, but yeah.
That's
like, that's how I would say it.
And it was written in the voice of Alice, who was her life partner.
Yeah.
And she is also the woman who wrote Rose is a Rose is a Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no there, there.
There is no there, there. Yep.
Yep.
Homophones.
So she wrote a couple of other books, and I really would be interested in reading some of them. Like, they seemed, they sound really interesting, especially for the time that she was writing them in. One of them was about a lesbian romantic affair that involved many of her friends.
Mm.
So it's just, I would be so interested to see and read how an affair was written about, because I just don't think that that was a common
Right. There topic. Probably weren't a lot of women writing about lesbian affairs.
Let alone a lesbian affair,
right.
Yes. And during all of this time, too, it was interesting to think about, she was Jewish, and she was living in Nazi-occupied France.
Wow.
So, like, on top of being a writer and an artist,
right?
How do you, I just don't even know. You just have to be a very strong, bold human.
Did she leave France, or did she stay?
She stayed.
Wow.
I don't know how.
Yeah.
But, Gertrude, she passed away after a stomach surgery.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and her partner, Alice, was just devastated. Gertrude willed her estate and her art collection to Alice, but since they were not legally recognized as a couple or married, Gertrude's family ended up taking action and took most of the artwork when Alice was away on vacation.
If you didn't hear my eye roll.
So much bullshit.
I was gonna say, that's such bullshit. Yuck.
And it just, like, she didn't have money. She didn't have anything.
Yeah.
Because she herself was also a writer and just an mm-hmm. artist. And like, you lose your partner. Ah,
malarkey.
So much bad. But she kept herself afloat. She kept doing her writing, and she wrote a cookbook. And it's kind of funny because it had a recipe for hashish fudge,
mm-hmm.
Which was contributed by a friend of hers named Brian Ginson. Brian with an O. Had to include
Brian.
It. Brian.
Brian.
But basically, it was a recipe for hash brownies.
So is it called hashish?
Hashish.
How is it said?
H-A-S-C-H-I-C-H.
Oh my goodness.
So, but yeah, definitely the recipe called for cannabis in the brownies, or in the fudge, which I thought was just fun and great.
That's pretty good.
She also then, she wrote her own autobiography that ended abruptly with Gertrude's death, which I thought was just tragically sad.
Right, my life ends here.
My life ends here.
Oh, boy.
But she lived on to be 89.
Wow.
And she did not have money, and she died in poverty.
Mm.
She just, so sad. But very sweetly, she is buried next to Gertrude Stein, and her name is engraved on the back of Gertrude's headstone.
Aww.
So that's kind of sweet.
That's really sweet.
The couple together, they've inspired film and plays, and there's actually a street in San Francisco dedicated, like a dedicated block to Alice.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was hard for me to really get into Santayana and the philosophy of his work and all of his ideas. But I think overall, he was just a smart guy who saw the world differently and inspired a lot of other people who then did do some big things. So
maybe not a fire starter so much as just like a good things starter.
He was there. People knew him.
Yeah.
But
he had thoughts. He had deep thoughts.
When he died, people said goodbye.
My current, and we've just talked about this, but as my current philosophy education is basically from watching The Good Place on NBC.
Teach me all of it, Chidi.
Chidi, teach me. If you don't watch The Good Place, you should go watch The Good Place.
It's so good.
So good.
It's so good. And Chidi makes all of learning about this all tolerable.
Yeah.
And he's good looking.
He is. Yeah. He started the fire.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
Boom, boom.
Goodbye.
Bye. Wir sind hier zum Feiern, lass die Box vibrieren.